Hi there, and welcome back to the University of Laws podcast. I'm your host, Rick Palmer. Today, I'm going to talk to you about a business concept, and it's called corporate social responsibility. And it's something that most businesses do. And we ran an event recently that was on this, that was our flagship summer event that maybe a lot of you did attend. So I got the author of the event to meet with me and have a chat with me about corporate social responsibility and the topic of greenwashing. We'll introduce both these concepts, and we'll tell you a few case studies as well that explain a bit more in depth about what it actually means. And it'll also give you a few hints and tips about where to take this further and develop yourself a little bit further. So I won't talk anymore. I'll get straight back to our recording. So this is me and Antonia talking about our event and recapping all the really important information. Enjoy. Let's kick off first off with, what do you think corporate social responsibility is?
So I would say it's kind of when businesses bring in any social or environmental elements into their strategies. So they don't just focus on the money or the economics, but they take into account the environment, the planet, but also the people that work there and the community they serve.
Cool. So what ways were we, when we were like chatting with the group, what can you remember any of the ways that we were thinking of how it's actually completed, how business actually run social responsibility?
So often they have kind of environmental initiatives, so they'll commit to recycling so much or using renewable energy, or they'll take it on the people side and they'll invest in the communities they operate in, they'll give jobs, and they'll also kind of give back to schools and projects within the community.
Stuff like if a business replaced all their light bulbs with energy saving bulbs, or if you're a, I don't know, like a publishing house or a newspaper and you plant some trees somewhere to try and neutralize your carbon footprint, it's things like that for the environmental. And then I guess for the other side, it's stuff like fair trade, making sure that everything comes from a socially responsible background, as well as looking after your employees that are in-house. And you split it into three categories, and they were, if I remember correctly, I'm not looking at a sheet, I promise, maybe I am, philanthropy, enlightened self-interest, and straightforward self-interest. And maybe we've discussed this, I'd say, a few hundred times, and I still sometimes forget and re-ask you the answer. So can you give me an idea of what each one is?
So philanthropy is when a company kind of donates something. It can be funds, it can be resources, and these have a benefit of some sort to the local community. So they're taking their operations and they're giving it back to wherever they're based. Enlightened self-interest can be kind of generating positive publicity through partnerships or sponsoring worthy causes. So it doesn't actually have to do with anything that the company does, but they just want to sponsor or partner up with something that's doing a really good thing. And then straightforward self-interest is when they're investing directly in their company for a good reason. So it can be staff training, regeneration projects and initiatives and things like that.
Right, so I'm going to test myself now, if that's all right.
Go ahead.
Philanthropy. I'm going to say an example of philanthropy would be if you were to donate money to a local charity.
Yeah, exactly. So there can be a charity and you could have spare, if you're a fashion retailer, for example, you'll have spare clothing in the store. You can donate it to your local charity and it can go back to people in the community.
Oh, cool. So that would also be like when some places will like, what's it called? Prep sometimes, I think, donates its food to homeless charities for feed like gym shelters. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Enlightened self-interest. So this might be if, say, a company sponsored like Pride or supported like the Black Lives Matter movement. That's enlightened self. Oh, there was a good one that you gave me that was Netflix. Is that enlightened?
Yeah, it is. So Netflix, when the Black Lives Matter movement happened and it was kind of all over the media, Netflix promoted their kind of black actors, producers, directors, and had a feature part on their main page to promote all these movies. and TV series.
So I'm 2 for 2. And straightforward self-interest. This would be if you were to offer a certain type of development within the company to your maybe your staff to help support their development, but also it rewards the business a little bit because it come, you know, it's helping build the business from the inside out as well.
Yeah, so a lot of the time it just is training projects within companies that help staff members like move up the ranks and really like further their knowledge of the company.
Cool. And so we discussed a little bit with the classroom, virtual classroom or virtual lecture theatre, actually, because there was a lot of people there. We discussed the pros and cons on why businesses would do this. Obviously, do you want to give an example of a company that did do it and why? And I'll give a negative. I've got a negative.
Yeah, so a really good case study, which we spoke about in the session, was Shell. And Shell actually do quite a lot now with sponsoring environmental work and causes, because basically it had been involved in a court case where there was some issues about their position on the environment. But because they sponsored environmental causes and they did try and improve their image towards this, they were fined a lot less than what they would have been done, and their kind of punishments were kind of not as severe if they hadn't have already sponsored things. So it is a really good reason to make sure you are being environmentally friendly, because if you do make a mistake, and obviously companies do, they're not perfect, but it will go in your favour, and so it should show that companies need to be keen to promote themselves as being environmentally and socially friendly.
Yeah, I mean, there was, I haven't got the stats from it, but we had some stats that we were chatting about, and there was one that was, there's like billions, it's a £1 billion industry, corporate social responsibility, and it's not just for the press, which is a big thing, obviously, your positive press and your clients and your customers will increase. But there was also things like that where it actually gave them something to use as evidence in court, and then obviously you're also, what was I going to say then? There was a really good, things like tax breaks as well sometimes, you know, if you're more sustainable, your building's more eco-friendly, you often actually get tax breaks as well. And the negative one that I had, which is where someone isn't being socially responsible, and actually to this point, and it leads on a little bit to what we're talking about later, which is greenwashing, was the VW Volkswagen emission scandal. I think that was in 2015. And a lot of people have heard of it, and it was very much kind of paraphrasing a lot of the information here. So I would advise people to go away and research something like this. But it was that there was a special device which was supposed to track in the emissions all the cars that they were producing were letting out into the environment, and how much they were damaging, and how carbon footprint based on all the different vehicles they were producing. And they'd got this special thing that was making it look like there was a lot less problems than they were actually creating. So it made them look a lot more green than they were. And when they were actually found out, a few things happened which are negative. Their stock price plummeted, they got taken to court, and there's a huge class action, which is where basically tons of people that are affected all sue all at once, which is a very aggressive way of being taken down in a courtroom. And then also I think their CEO within a few days or a week also had to quit. So that was I mean, it's quite a shocking case, and they got everything they deserved really for something so negative, but it was it shows how not being social responsible has super negative connotations, as well as just bad publicity.
Yeah, and it is important for companies to kind of learn from these mistakes of other companies, because these things are going to happen. It was like huge media coverage of that Volkswagen scandal, and it should like teach almost other kind of car manufacturers, but in other industries, to not kind of hide the claims and just to be upfront and honest with people.
Yeah. Well, if anything as well, it almost boosted all the other car industries, because they, you'll always see now how many, one of the really big companies, I can't think who it was, but one of the ones you would be surprised at is planning to have every single car they're producing by, I think, 2030 become electric. And you know, so many more cars have jumped on that now because of the negativity associated with the VW. The wave of that meant that if they got on top of it in the right way, they increased their sales. So that's another way, and obviously which CSR is supporting them, and that's very much more environmentally focused. And the next thing that we talked about at our session, if you remember, it's that one that we always struggle to come up with any examples, and then luckily the students didn't, was buzzwords. So what is your definition of a buzzword?
A buzzword is something that in society can sound quite new and exciting. It's a very like trendy word, as you would say, but people kind of misunderstand them or use them out of context, which they can be good if they're used in the right way, but a lot of the time people just don't understand them and throw them out there. Corporate responsibility has been a buzzword until people kind of got into the momentum of really understanding what it was. People just used to throw it out there as a word and say, oh yeah, I'm responsible, and what does that actually mean?
Yeah, it is funny because some of them really, really stick. And then like say corporate social responsibility, it was a buzzword, but now it's kind of a really useful word for us to have. But then you always think of them a little bit of like, yeah, and then like just saying these really stupid, like that's just so much synergy there, and that's really dovetailing. And yeah. Can you think of any of the good buzzwords that we got in the...
I think one that sticks with me, and it's because I have no idea in what context you would use it, is hyper automation.
Yes.
I have no idea what that is, but
I'm going to use my one then. My favorite one was ecotourism. I just thought that was a really good, that's a proper buzzword there. I just, when they came up with it, was good. There's one that I always hear in marketing, which I actually do think is quite good, but it does sound a bit like bougie, with evergreen. And it's if you've got a campaign and taking things like dates and some of it's too specific out of it. So you can use the campaign like all year round, or you just make stuff more general so it's more usable. And it's a useful phrase, but every time I bring it up, people are like, oh, here we go.
I think people like to describe themselves as dynamic as well. And that's one that comes across, and you think, what does, like, you need to specify in what context? Because if you just go, oh yeah, I'm a dynamic individual, like it makes you sound like there's not a lot there then, because how are you dynamic?
If anything, it creeps me out a little bit. Some are good, some not so good. Oh, and then the buzzword that we went on to, which was a good buzzword, because again, it's a really useful term for something. And without this, I actually think the whole thing wouldn't be as widely known without the word. The word helps us kind of like identify it, but was greenwashing. So can you give us a little bit of a description of what greenwashing is?
So greenwashing is where it's a concept where businesses kind of give out a false impression that they are more socially responsible and eco-friendly than what they actually are. They often give out kind of misleading information and create this false impression of the way they behave.
I've got a good example of it, and I'm not reading off a piece of paper, I promise. Or maybe I am. But no, I just wanted, because it's a really good example, and I wanted to make sure I give you the right information. But in February 2020, so really, really recently, everyone's favourite airline, Ryanair, they were banned by the UK watchdog over claims of greenwashing. And what it was, in a nutshell, was that they'd claimed that they were the lowest carbon emissions of any major airline. And this obviously with the airlines being one of the biggest contributors to the carbon footprint was a huge statement to make, and it's something that influences so many people, especially with people like Greta Thunberg in the world that refuse to fly by air because of it. And she's a huge influence on so many people. So to hear this kind of statement makes you think, oh, well, if I'm going to fly with anyone, I should fly with them. But then obviously going deeper into people's claims is sometimes where you find it. Greenwashing is just a word that's been plastered over, and it hides a little bit what's underneath. And it was that they were found that they'd not really taken into account a lot of other companies that are actually major, and a lot of their data went back, was it something like 2011? Some of their data was going back to where they were claiming, obviously they had fewer routes, other airlines might have newer planes, so it was all a little bit much. And so that was in 2019 that they claimed it, I think, and then in 2020 is when they really got the slap on the wrist, and that would have been quite a huge legal issue probably. And again, regardless of the legal issue, sometimes the amount of negative fallout that must have come from that was pretty dire.
And I think claims like that in 2011, like using data that far back, is madness. I think in an age where technology is constantly evolving and data is readily available, you'd want to use your most up to date and not kind of mislead people by using data that's nearly 10 years old.
Well, it's like, and they might have been comparing against airlines that don't even exist anymore. So yeah, not not a great way of doing it, is it? So then we went on to really focus what we were talking about, and that was because we wanted to have something we could do a case study on. So we thought, well, what area of industry are we all probably a little bit connected to in some way? And fast fashion is quite a good one, because regardless of if we're absolutely hammering at ASOS, or we love going and getting sportswear from activewear from JD Sports, we're all kind of people that do get into fast fashion, Primark, like we're all a big fan. People like to turn out looking good. So it was a good industry where we have probably a little bit more insight, and everyone listening to this probably has some touch with fast fashion. So just to start with, how would you describe what actually we mean by fast fashion? Because again, that's a bit of a buzzword again.
So I think the way we explained fast fashion was it was the part of the industry that wasn't necessarily being sustainable. And it was this idea that it's quite fast moving, the styles change a lot, there's a lot of waste in there, and it is kind of clothing that you wear a few times and then it becomes quite disposable. It's not part of the kind of, you see some of the really big, more high-end high street chains who will go like buy once, wear forever, and that's the complete opposite of what fast fashion is.
Yeah, because when we were looking at it, there's actually tons of different things that are really negative to the environment, and also fast fashion contributes to the social issues as well. But because like you say, like when I was younger, you'd buy a coat that would last you for, you know, at least a year growing up, and if you were an adult that finished growing, you would make that coat would last you a while. Whereas now, I mean, I'm just as guilty. Like I will buy a few coats first and season, and also fast fashion is creating more seasons. So where you used to buy like spring and summer clothes, and then you might buy some winter autumn clothes, now everyone's buying, you know, it could be a month and you buy a new set of outfits. And it not only contributes because people aren't renewing and refreshing clothing and there's a huge amount of waste, but you were saying about some of the byproducts of creating it, because they're made with cheaper synthetics, actually the pollution of the ocean is coming off just fast fashion clothing and all the poly blends and things that we're having, this because they're obviously made a lot cheaper and a lot quicker. And it also contributes to, in some respects, unfair social, because there's going to be to resource that amount of much product, there's got, you know, looking down the supply chain, to be able to produce so much cheap, quick clothing, there's probably not going to be a great supply chain in a lot of places. Although interestingly, when we did the deeper dive into Primark, we found that they were a lot better than we were ever expecting them, weren't we?
Yeah, definitely. I think they've created so many initiatives to try and help combat this fast fashion kind of stereotype. And they are kind of the example of fast fashion. You know, you could go into a Primark shop 1 week and then you go in the next week and they'll have different stuff. So that is an example, but they've tried to bring in initiatives to help the workforce and the environment to try and counteract some of these negative practices.
Yeah, and when we were looking at how you can kind of spot it to see whether or not, because the fact is that maybe fast fashion is going nowhere, but it's how companies deal with it. We have kind of come to six main ways. So if we have another look at those. So the first one we have was look for numbers and not words. So what did we mean by that?
So it was kind of about when you look at company websites or you research them, a lot of the time they will say that the products are sustainably made or they have recyclable materials. But really when we said look for numbers is look for figures that will back that up. So for example, we used Adidas, and I think a practical example of this was when they said they aim to produce 15 to 20 million shoes using recyclable plastic from beaches. So it's all very kind of identifiable. There's a figure there. there's also the wording about recyclable, and it really kind of highlights where they're being responsible. And so if they do fall back on that, people can go, well, this was the claim you made, and they can be held accountable for their actions more.
Yeah. I guess it's not greenwashing because it's social, not environmental, but another thing again is, was it Toms, that for every pair of Toms you buy, they donate a pair of shoes to, and that was, I guess that's philanthropy, maybe? I can't think of which of the three it would come under, but that was a figure that for everyone you got this, so there was an actual certifiable, tangible figure, like you say, whereas if it's uses some recyclable products and you find out they use 1%, an example of what greenwashing is.
It's a bit misleading.
So the other one, the next one was natural doesn't always mean eco-friendly. So what did you mean by this?
So what we meant was, because a lot of companies will state that they use natural materials, so things like viscose, bamboo, and materials like that do come from, you know, nature. But the point there was they are only sustainable and eco-friendly based on how they're sourced. So Nike developed an index called the HIG Materials Sustainability Index, which originally was called the Nike Index, but they then made it an industry standard so that everyone kind of operated to a certain level so that they could say, this is where our natural materials have come from and they've been sourced well, so we've not damaged the planet in the process.
I guess, so an example, I'm always going outside of what we're talking about, but taking it out of fast fashion, that would be an example of this is the, would you say the palm oil, like, it's kind of a scandal at times, but where, is it palm oil? Where they literally make, it's this natural product, but it's something like 30 gorillas lose their natural habitat, is it die from a loss of natural habitat a day because of how it's sourced? So even though it's a natural product, it's sourced in such an environmentally friendly way that it's killing endangered species.
Yeah.
So the next one is vegan doesn't always mean sustainable.
Yeah, again, so this kind of links in to that point about being natural. So vegan kind of products are automatically a bit more eco-friendly because, you know, you do take into account animal welfare, and so you are using alternatives to things like fur and leather. But really, again, some of these synthetic alternatives are quite high in oil, so they have quite a high oil percentage within them, which can be really bad for the environment. And I think after the oil spill, that kind of became more of a topic of people considering, actually, is this good for the environment?
Yeah. And the next one is a really good point, and it's find out more about suppliers.
Yes, so this is just kind of researching the companies you buy for. If you do care about the environment and being socially responsible, there'll be quite a few companies out there today that will have in-depth information on their suppliers. So they can say that the factories in kind of developing countries, are the workers are being treated well, that the factories are safe. And I think that's a huge kind of, you know, issue nowadays after the factory collapse in Bangladesh. Again, it's once something bad happens, it becomes, you know, prominent and an issue for most businesses. And so now, off the back of that, companies do kind of track their suppliers. And even ASOS, who you could think, how could they possibly do it? They have their own brands and their own factories, but they're also representing how many brands as well that aren't linked to them. And so they also have like a third party form who have to submit their factory information as well, so they can keep account of everyone they're representing.
It's a really good point, because you could be told that, say you were buying a product in a bottle, like a beauty product, and you were being told that it was made from all natural environments and it was really good, all natural products and it was good for the environment and so on, then that could be all good. But you don't realise sometimes that what's gone into that product has been come from a different supplier. So, you know, the bottle could have been produced inappropriately, or you always think that everything that's coming out of the factory has come from a raw material. But actually, no, stuff that goes, especially in fashion, materials are delivered to factories to be sewn and put onto a provider. And I guess looking back through that supply chain is a really smart idea. And ASOS has got that great map, hasn't it? You can spoke everything out with. The next one we had, number five, was check for certifications.
Yeah, so this is a kind of, again, links to doing research and really looking into the companies. And I think those that really do it well have these industry standard accreditations, a bit like the sustainability index that Nike came up with. You will have industry standards for certain raw materials such as cotton. So that's a great example. You've got things like the Better Cotton Initiative and the organic cotton content standards. So a lot of the time you need to check that these are coming from reliable sources, and they are again also being sourced well and in a good way as to not destroy the environment while you're using them.
Definitely. And then the final point that we had, number six, was invest in brands with a holistic approach.
Yeah, so a lot of the time, not just fashion companies, but companies all over the world will focus their corporate social responsibility on one element within the company. And that's all well and good, but really it's those companies that show that they've kind of invested in this for the long term. So they implement it in their headquarters. So it could be like you said earlier about the light bulbs. They invest it into their stores, their design process, their manufacturing, everything about them. And I think my favourite example of this, and I love to shop there because of their approach, is H&M. So they have their recyclable scheme where you can take back old clothes and they will either recycle them or they'll send them out to charities and things to give to people who need them. And then they also have a conscious exclusive range that comes out every year, and it features only environmentally friendly clothing. And then they also have that in-depth analysis on their suppliers, so you know where the clothes are coming from.
Cool. And so that's they were our six ways of spotting it, but I think the obviously tying this always back to, we're looking at this from how we would investigate and study business. Obviously, the reason that we're looking at this is that this is what your, you know, at the end of the day, your business is based off having customers and clients. So the reason that you invest so much time and research into finding out about things like this is that you actually have to implement stuff now, but implement it effectively. So it would be, from a business perspective, the way you would look at this would be to apply, you know, we know that we're doing, like Adidas knew what they were doing. They've got this great process where they've got this recycling, their using recycled products and stuff, but then they need to look at how people are investigating greenwashing and apply it, and that's how we are obviously able to find out about it now. So that's just kind of how we turned it on the head as well, like from the perspective of you were in a business, what you would do. And we won't talk about the SWOT analysis stuff that we did, but do you want to give as kind of a nice wrap up for what we talked about just now, an idea of where anyone that's listening could take this, like what can they do next to maybe develop themselves a bit further, looking at personal statements and stuff, what might help them develop?
So just like you mentioned, a SWOT analysis, we did it in the session. It is kind of a great tool for students to use. It is kind of quite a basic analytic tool. It's not too kind of difficult to understand. And students can go away and look at a SWOT analysis of a company and look at their CSR within that. So what are the strengths of their CSR policy? What are the things that they're doing really well? What are some areas of weakness in the business? Every business, every individual has weaknesses. So focus on those, because then they're what you can build from and create new opportunities, which is the next one. So it's, where can you tap into? What can you do that's different? Have a look. There's so many opportunities out there for environmental growth, social growth, and really kind of making a difference. So what opportunities are out there for that company and or that industry? And then finally, what are the threats? So what are some of the big issues within that industry that kind of hinder you doing this well? A lot of the time, there's that bad media coverage. Like you said before, Rick, about Ryanair, it's the fallout that comes after what they've actually done. So what are they going to then do to repair that impression that they've made off the back of that advert? And I think that's what's really important, is to just look at it from a whole business perspective.
No, I think that's great. And I think we did, as part of it, the follow-up test that we gave was Primark, and that's where we'd done a bit of the research already. And it was really interesting what we found, because we kind of maybe went in a little bit assuming that it probably wouldn't be that good because it is so cheap and it is there's so much option and there's so much available. But actually, when we looked, they had so much in place. So maybe anyone who wants to take this to do some more further development, if they did to Primark, you might find that really interesting. But you could also apply this to any business. It doesn't need to necessarily be in fast fashion. Just maybe a business that you interact with a lot and just think about it. You know, so maybe at the moment you're getting tons of Uber Eats, then apply it to that and just see, well, what's the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. The thing that I was thinking, so a little bit different. So that one's an actual business analysis. I thought a way that I might develop would be do a development is a case study instead of where you're, instead of doing a business analysis, maybe just a bit of business research on someone who has failed in the past. So it could be Ryanair, it could be the emission scandal from Volkswagen, it could be the factory collapse in Bangladesh, or it could just be, you know, there's tons of BP oil spills. And I think what would be really interesting is to research those. There's going to be lots of news articles and information about it, but then see what happened afterwards and try and see what a good way of seeing how to be successful in business is see how their competitors reacted. You know, so the fact is that I was saying about the VW scandal, that there was the competitors who then went on to really showcase how green their cars were the ones that really expanded their businesses at that point. So it'd be really interesting to do a case study of that and then obviously think about where the future could be. You could also look at maybe what you would recommend if you were maybe called in at the 11th hour after a scandal like that. How might you support the business? So maybe look at it from what area you want to be in. Do you want to be in business development? Do you want to be in marketing? That's a bit vague, I guess. But I'd say like a case study of a negative where and just to see how it affected the industry. I think that would be a good way to just develop your knowledge. And obviously, you're not necessarily who wants to write an essay, and obviously to no one. But I think it's a really good way for when you're looking at your personal statement or you're talking to people for work experience, just to prove that you've gone a little bit out of your way rather than the usual people that just tell us what they've done in the classroom. So that's why I think it'd be really good to do something like that. Right, well, thank you so much. And thank you for delivering. I'm very excited for us to figure out what we might do at our next event. Change it up a little bit, but hopefully everyone's got as obsessed with CSR and greenwashing as we did over the searching all this.
Anyone has any ideas of what you want our next event to be, send us an email. We'll see if we can do it. The possibilities are endless, so just let us know.
Definitely. And we've got tons of resources on our website, so go on to that. And also look at the events. We've always got events going on, so we know tricky at the moment maybe to get any experience, but for that reason, we're developing stuff that you can come and join us on. So come and find us on law.ac.uk. And thanks a lot, Antonia. And thanks for everyone who's tuned in.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Bye. See you all soon.